I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We explore the cultural and physical development of life in the modern city through the lens of history and the context of community. Today's show, The Past, Present, and Future of Paper. Brought to you by Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates. Paper is the ubiquitous product we never think about. We may live in a digital world, but paper, a very old-school product, is still what keeps the pages of our world turning. Our money is still printed on it, to the tune of about $1 billion a day. Our books still written on it, about 800 a day. And we still communicate with it, over 400 million letters a day. Despite these staggering numbers, there's no denying that the world is changing, speeding up, and using less paper every year. With that in mind, we decided to explore the past, present, and future of paper. My guests today are Emory Journalism Professor Lee Klontz and the Education Curator at the Museum of Papermaking at Georgia Tech, Virginia Howell.
Say it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it
would Let's start by telling people who you are. I know who you are. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Tell people who you are, what you do, and then we'll just kind of jump into the whole thing.
Okay. Well, my name is Virginia Howell, and I'm the Education Curator at the Robert C. Williams Museum of Papermaking located at Georgia Tech.
And I have had the pleasure of getting to come over to the museum, take the tour, which was really fascinating, and then jump into paper making.
Yes.
You have a permanent structure dedicated to something that is, tossed in the trash many times.
Absolutely. We preserve and protect and interpret the history of paper and papermaking. And exactly, it's something that most of us don't think about. We think about what's on the paper. We don't think about the paper itself.
Can you give the listeners some of the highlights of what they would see if they came and visited?
Sure. Our long-term exhibit shows basically the history of paper and papermaking over 2,000 years. But we actually start before paper was invented with other non-paper materials. So bark books, papyrus, tapa cloths, which are these amazing large pieces of bark that has been beaten into a pliable shape. So that's where we begin, is by talking about other things people have used for communication and for writing on. And then we turn to paper, because paper is a little bit different. For paper to be paper, it has to follow two main rules. It has to be from a plant, and it has to be macerated or pulped. And that's the distinction between bark or papyrus. Those are things that don't get macerated.
So like 2,000 years ago or so, the Chinese invent paper, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it takes off in popularity.
It took a long time to spread out of China. It was a Chinese invention solely for about 500 years, and then it spread to Korea and then to Japan and then across into India and through Western Asia. It took 1,000 years before the first paper mill was made in Europe, or was constructed in Europe, and that was in Italy. There was another one at a very similar time in Spain. But you'll notice Mediterranean countries, so it's spreading organically and naturally. But learning how to make paper was actually a pretty tight secret for a while.
Why was that?
Because it's so much easier to use than parchment. It's so much easier to get than silk. And if you can control the means of production, then you've got a lock on the market. So the Chinese were wanting to keep that as something that they had a skill for. In fact, Chinese papermakers were kidnapped by Turks and made to make paper. That's how the Turkish learned how to make paper, was by basically kidnapping the papermakers, which is incredible. Today, you don't think about that sort of thing. Corporate espionage is at a totally different level 1,000 years ago.
That's like adding insult to injury when you have to write the ransom note on the paper that
exactly.
You made. Let's tell people how to make paper.
Well, as I said, you have to have a plant, and you can use lots of different plants. Most of the paper that we use today does come from trees. It is a wood product. The process for making paper out of trees is slightly different than some of the other plants that you might use. You pulp your fibers until they are very, very fine, and you want to saturate them with water. That actually makes for a tighter bonded paper. And then you're going to use a vat which does not have to be very complicated or fancy. We use a plastic bucket at the museum. And it's about 95% water to 5% pulp. And then you need some surface to put the pulp onto. We tend to do the Western style at the museum, which involves a mold and a deckle. And the mold is just a basic, you can almost use a window screen with it, and it works just fine. But you need some sort of surface that will support the pulp and let the water drain out. And then we use a deckle, which is a lid that goes on the top to create that square shape.
Like a frame.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's often the term that we use with our school groups that come in. And then you stir up the vat. That's called charging the vat. You take your mold and deckle, put them into the vat, draw them back, lift them straight up. Because, of course, if you bring them up at an angle, you get lopsided paper. And nobody wants lopsided paper. So you got to bring it straight up, let the water drain. And then you couch or couch the paper. And that removes some of the water. And then you go through a drying process. So from pulling it from the vat to having a finished product, if you're doing it the authentic way, that'll take 2 or 3 days. If you're doing it the sped up version, so you can take home a souvenir to show mom and dad from the museum, we can get it done in 5 minutes.
That's me. I'd like to talk a little bit about newspapers.
Okay.
And also just your opinion on the future of journalism.
We've seen the decline in print newspapers, and magazines are having issues in terms of people buying terrestrial copies of it. But people will want information. And I think that we're kind of, this is my own personal opinion at this point, that we are at a point in time where people are going to start seeking a balance of how much paper and how much electronic media do they want to have. 100 years down the road, people will be looking at our newspapers as this is a point in time where we were really trying to figure out how do we make journalism happen in a totally different way than what we are used to. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I go visit them in my name. If you come around here, I'll make them all day. I get one down in a second if you wait. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I go visit them in my name. If you come around here, I'll make them all day. I get one down in a second if you wait. Sometimes I think sitting on trains, every step I get to, I'm clocking that game.
My name is Lee Klontz. I am an academic technologist at Emory University, and I teach in the journalism program there. I teach digital journalism. And academic technologist basically means that we're the people that faculty and students look to help them enable technology in the classroom. And what that really requires of me is that I try to stay ahead of what our faculty and students are going to be coming to us with so that we're not scrambling to catch up. So I'm really lucky in that I get to play with new technologies and experiment with them and kind of help faculty pioneer them for teaching primarily.
There's a kind of an interesting relationship between technology and journalism. There are folks in the world of journalism who don't think that social media has a place there. What do you think?
I think everyone saw the writing on the wall, which is that print as a standalone form of content expression probably wasn't going to cut it for the foreseeable future. There was going to be a time when journalists were going to need to be these kind of the Swiss Army knife metaphor gets overused, but these kind of people who could bring different kinds of skills as appropriate for the story that they were trying to tell. And I think the fundamentals of reporting and writing and good news judgment and ethics, those transcend any form of expression, and those are useful if you're writing a tweet or if you're writing a book.
You're going to have generations of students in the not too distant future that don't have that print. I mean, how do you view this remediation and from print to digital?
What's interesting to me about the students that I teach is I don't think a lot of them have loyalty to print as an expression of media. They have a lot of allegiance and confidence in the brands that primarily produce print. So if you talk about the New York Times or the Washington Post, those brands have a lot of credibility with these students. I don't think these students probably ever pick up a physical Washington Post or New York Times or Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I think they're consuming all of that content online, on tablets, on computers.
I'm curious what you think about technology as it relates to paper.
Well, it's funny because my undergraduate degree was in journalism. I graduated in 1991, and that was pre just about everything digital. That was right about the time that, I mean, you could get an AOL account, and I had one, but for the most part, there wasn't really any pervasive digital content. And I had to take, as part of that program, basically a print production class. And we learned all about, you know, intaglio printing and gravure and all these kind of different technologies for printing. And we did a lot of work with X-Acto knives and just physical forms of expression. Likewise, we took a darkroom class and we had to learn how to develop film in a darkroom and make prints with light. And I have to say, that has been an incredibly valuable background, even in what is now, I mean, I work pretty much entirely digitally today, but that background and the vocabulary and the sense of, you know, if you look at a program like Photoshop, it uses lots of different tropes that are directly taken from the physical act of printing photos, which very few people do anymore. And nobody who learns Photoshop today has probably ever done. But that background in the physical treatment of the media really has been very helpful to me throughout my career. It grounds you in, you know, these things didn't come from nowhere, right? I mean, any of this technology oftentimes is based on paper, right? They're, you know, or applications, entire class.
Or some type of media. You know, with the digital media program, it's like there are affordances and there are cues to where we are today, like you said. I mean, like as an example, the icon of the trash can on our computer screen, that someone just didn't come up with that. It came because there's something out there that we put things we don't want into.
Right. Files, you know? Folders. Right. I mean, so many of the concepts that computers are based on come directly from physical items. So I think that's a great background for anybody working in any kind of digital technology, is to put the digital aside sometimes and actually, like, if I'm doing any design work, and I'm not really a designer, but sometimes it's fun to do, I use colored pencils and paper. I mean, because it's freeing. You know, the tool doesn't get between me and the thing that I'm trying to create. And somehow you feel a little less invested in it when it's just a quick scribble that you're kind of building on. You know, I have some newspapers from the moon landing that were given to me. I have a Life magazine from the year I was born. You know, I kept magazines from 9/11, and you know, these are really interesting snapshots of time that really are on the edge of not existing for most people. And probably 15 years from now, many of them won't exist. I wouldn't advocate that we should keep print or any other form of media around just for the kind of artifact quality, because most news is fairly disposable, right? Most stories 48 hours after they're published are not all that interesting anymore. But there is this kind of record, this physical record that is rendered in this journalism that is going to really leave a hole.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Lee Klontz and Virginia Howell. Of course, I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you next month.